friends, this is Ted again, back with the Out of This World Radio. We're going right to an interview now with one of the world's famous Indian healers from Lake Titicaca, Sylvia Chukwuemeka. I like to play that now. You'll find it really interesting.
We have a wonderful healer from Peru today. Her name is Sylvia Kali Sayachukimia. And she's here in the Seattle area giving a series of workshops. And I want to welcome her to the Out of This World Radio. Hello. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. I am Sylvia Calisaya. I come from Peru. But the place where I come is around the Lake Titicaca. You know, Lake Titicaca is one of the highest lakes in the world. It's very high, you know.
Beautiful, beautiful. You say you're a traditional Aymara, is that right?
Yes, people around the Lake Titicaca are preserving many things, and as the language. So Aymara is a pre-Inca language.
Beautiful. Well, you're a healer descended from the pre-Inca people who inhabit the southern Lake Titicaca region. You were born and raised in a small highland village. You left as a young woman to pursue your education and professional life, and you later returned to the traditional teachings of your people. You're an expert at the ancient art of reading coca leaves for divination and healing, and is proprietor of the Coca Leaf Museum in Punto, Peru. Cocoa is considered a sacred plant for the inhabitants of the Indies and is still held in veneration among the indigenous and mestizo peoples of South America.
Yes, I am a healer, so I learned from my grandparents, my grandmother, my mother, to be a healer and the use of the coca leaves for everything around my people. In the Lake Titicaca, they are still using the sacred coca leaves for everything.
Now, one thing I'm very curious about, you say you use the coca leaves for divination and for seeing into the future and helping people?
Yes, coca leaves are really very sacred leaves, and the healers in my home place are still using for divination. We can know by the coca leaves about the person, and also we use for healing, for medicine. We know coca leaves can heal more than 50 illnesses and are still used by the healers in my home place.
Oh, that's wonderful. What kinds of things do they use the coca leaves to heal?
Well, I know it's a very medicinal, and we use for healing diabetes, for example. We can use to heal osteoporosis because it contains a lot of calcium. When the people, they go Peru or the high Andes, very quickly everybody will give a cup of tea of coca because it helps the people in the high Andes for irrigation of the blood to the head. You know, it's very high, that place, over 12,500 feet, so there is a little oxygen there, so when we offer to the visitors the coca tea, will help, you know, to the altitude sickness. So it's very good for heart and for the irrigation of the blood to the head. And also we can use for stomach, you know. Mm-hmm. Contains a lot of alkaloids, but of course the one is the cocaine, and that's the controversial point.
I see. How did you learn to read coca leaves? Was it from your mother or was it a natural gift?
I can say both, because my mother, both of them, my grandmother, they were healers. And they were doing a lot of healings there, and I was with them and I learned. But I can say it's the gift, because the spirit of the coca can come to me and then I can read the leaves when I am dropping, and I can read what they will say about the person.
Sylvia, if you don't mind, could you please demonstrate a reading of coca leaves, perhaps for me?
Yes, okay.
She now has the coca leaves in front of her, and she's laid them out on a beautiful red piece of cloth.
head, you know, you have a problem in this part.
In my throat?
Yes. I can see that. This the most you have. In this side of the body, the left side, and this right foot. That's in your physical body.
Okay, thank you.
And I know you work with this chakra, the throat, the voice, mm-hmm. but you have to be careful what you said. You have to watch that way. You are going to travel someplace far, outside the country. Very soon, I don't know where, but you are going.
That is true.
Yeah, you are going. But maybe because the work you are going, but you have to go far, outside. It's going to be very soon.
That is correct. I'm going to Italy.
Wow.
And then I'm doing more traveling after that.
Just watch to whom you are going. Because there is between the team that you are going, someone is not good. But then will be successful.
I see. Someone I will be meeting is not good?
Yeah. Someone that you will see or you will join is not going to be good. But the rest is okay.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you telling me that so much.
You are welcome.
How long have you been doing this work?
Well, I can say it all my life, because my grandmother, my mother, they were doing this, and I did just since I was my 18, 19 years old for healing other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then after I've been traveling many places, I can say it all over the world, teaching about the wisdoms of my culture, especially the Aymaras, where we live around the Lake Titicaca.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Titicaca really is the place of the healers, where the people are still with the very natural medicine, as the use of the herbs, the plants, or animals for healing. And also is the place where the people are really very spiritual. And this wisdom I take for teaching all over the world to the people. This last time, this last year, is more than before.
Fascinating. Now, you're also the curator of the Coco Leaf and Costumes Museum in Punto, Peru?
Yes. After I learned about how many people use coca and are still using, healers are still using, I decided to seek more about the use of this coca in the sacred way, in the healing way for our ancestors. So then in that way, together my family, I founded the Museum of the Coca. Nowadays, this museum is very visited by the people because they want to learn about the coca, you know, mm-hmm. and their people can learn. And also I put a place close there, a healing center, where the people, they go there, they can learn about the healing and the healers, and there are still there. All kind of healing they can learn by the people close them.
That's amazing. Now, what's interesting about your museum, it seems like it's more of a spiritual healing center than a traditional museum.
Yes, will be as the spiritual center. We just recently reopened because it was in a rented place. And then now we decided to have a healing place. So every people, they go there, they can stay there and learn together, the healers there. So there will be some healing center for people. They want to go for medicine, especially for medicine.
Mm. Interesting. What kind of plans do you have for the future for your museum?
Well, they are not the plans. You know, the plans that we have, we are just thinking that maybe one day we can put the museum other places in the world, as here in America, and we are thinking in Holland to have a coca museum. Maybe if the spirit will want, we can have in other places in the world.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, one thing too, Sylvia, I understand that you're a tour guide and you also take people to sacred places.
Yes, because I am a healer, and I also work as a tour guide because the language, and I guided a lot of people in my home place. And in these last years, I take people, the ones they want to learn about the spiritual path and the wisdoms of the people there. So I take to the sacred places. Now we will have one group from this area, Seattle, and for the next year. And I have from other places as well, from Australia, from Holland, and from America, from Portland, Oregon, and Kansas City. They come to Peru, and I did a guide for them.
Oh, beautiful. What kind of sacred places do you visit, Sylvia?
You know, ancient people in Peru, Incas, they did a very special sacred temples. And one is, for example, Machu Picchu. Mm-hmm. And Machu Picchu is a very sacred place. And lots of people, they go, of course, to see. But if you go in the sacred path, you will step in the sacred temples there and have a healing in those places. And same on the Lake Titicaca, we have still very ancient temples, and there we do healing and we offer ceremonies to all our gods. So we find a spiritual path for the people that come to visit there.
Beautiful, beautiful. Are you familiar with John of God in Brazil? John of God in Brazil, he's a healer.
Yeah, I met him. I was in Brazil. I went to Brazil, and I met the John of God, and I met other healers, Carmen Ballestero, who has a very big healing center, and a radio as well. I was with her.
Oh, wonderful. Beautiful, beautiful. Tell me about the rest of your family. Your parents, are they healers too? Do you come from a line of healers?
Yes, especially my grandmother and my mother, they were healers. Mm-hmm. They were also midwives, mm-hmm. and I learned most of this from them. So my father passed away 7 years ago, but my mother is still alive. My grandmother passed away, but I learned. So I'm still with this. Thanks to them.
Well, that's beautiful. You know, it's such a special honor to have you, to interview you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you to you. And I hope after this, the people will learn and will want to learn more about the ancient wisdoms of my home place, especially Peru, and the Lake Titicaca and the Aymara people. And Aymaras are still free Inca people. They live there.
That's wonderful. Now, when the Spanish came, they were not, so you survived the Spanish times, is that right?
Yes. I know Spaniards, they wanted to force people, they killed people. But even that, Aymara people are still surviving. Spaniards, they couldn't cut from the root many things of these people. Thanks to this, we can see they are still surviving. But we said probably the spirituality of these people was helping to still surviving until now, because of course we are Catholics. But we said we are Catholics because we were forced, because the panic of the Spaniards, we become Catholic quickly. And nowadays we said we are Catholics, but this is face outside. And also to the Aymara people, other places people, they said that we are pantheists. You know what means the pantheism? To believe in many gods. Mm-hmm. And I think we are. We are mm-hmm. still with our ancient belief to the Mother Earth, to the Pachamama. Mm-hmm. We are still with the belief to the Mother Lake, to the water. We are still to the belief to the Father Sun. Mm-hmm. And we are still to the belief to the Mother Moon. The belief to the mountains, these are as guardians. These are still our gods.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you have a very beautiful connection to the planet.
Yes, it's a very natural and it's very connected mm-hmm. to the Pachamama, we said, our Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. For our ancients, God came through the Mother Earth, through the Pachamama. Mm-hmm. That's why our belief to the Mother Earth.
Sylvia, what was it like growing up in a highland village?
You know, I said that's the paradise. Where I live is really very high, and I said I live close to God, close to heaven. It's very natural, you know, and people there are still living in a very natural way. That's the most important.
Beautiful. I wish I could see pictures of Lake Titicaca, but I'm sure it's very pretty.
Yes, if you come to Peru, come to the Lake Titicaca, and I will be there waiting you. Because they said, actually, the islands we have on the lake is one of the nice and the best we have in the world.
Beautiful, beautiful. I want to ask you some other questions, too, if I may, about the Nazca Lines. Do you know much about that?
Of course. Nazca Line is part of our ancient people we have in the world. In Peru, the Nazca Lines is very mysterious. Probably they were connected with the extraterrestrials. It was built by them. Probably ancient people, they had a connection with them, mm-hmm. you know. Because no way to understand how people, they did those lines with the designs of animals in the high desert. Only way to understand it was the connection with the universe, and that was because probably the connection with the other space people. Mm-hmm. That's my belief.
Beautiful, wonderful. Do you see any UFOs around Lake Titicaca now?
Of course. Yeah. I had experience with that as well. When in my childhood, I used to see a big light up in the front of my house, and I used to say, oh, it's a tractor. But it was not a tractor in that top. Mm-hmm. It was a light of the UFOs, I think. Mm-hmm.
Do they contact you now, let's say telepathically or through your readings?
I know they contact, they come, they talk with the people. My mother used to say, they want to take you far away, then you are not going to come back, don't talk with them. So I used to scare yes, but I know they come and contact with the people mm-hmm. when you want and you accept.
Are they benevolent? Are they good-hearted or are they negatively good-hearted?
Yeah, they are good. Mm-hmm. They come for helping people, for healing and teaching.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any of the extraterrestrials yourself?
I felt, but not to see.
What did you feel, Sylvia?
I felt that they come. When they come, they want to teach, they want to say it, but between one can say what they want to say. Mm-hmm. Yes, that.
Beautiful, beautiful. When you do your readings, the messages come through the coca leaves to you, or are there spirits also with you as well?
You know, this coca has a very powerful spirit. Mm-hmm. The name of this spirit is the Inal Mama, and the Inal Mama comes through me and tells me what I need to say. Mm. Yeah. But the ones they come for reading, they need to have a trust to this. Because if not, we'll not open. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. I wanted to ask you, too, whether the spirits you communicate with, what do they see for the future of humanity? And what can we do to make this planet a better place?
You know, the spirits, when they say the spirit of the mountains, the spirit of the Pachamama, the Mother Earth, it says that one day this will change. One day this will be a paradise. This will be the balanced time. And we are in the balanced time now. We are going into the feminine time, and we know this will change. And we've been in the masculine power, male power, and now we change it into the feminine power, and I know everything will change. I know this will be the balanced time, and they tell that We have yet to heal. Mother Earth nowadays is very damaged. People were doing so many bad things. So we have to heal the Mother Earth. We have to respect our Mother Earth. And after that, probably this will be a paradise because we live on.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. People often ask me, Sylvia, what can they do to make this a better planet? What would your spirit friends recommend?
You know, we have rules in our belief, in our home. We have laws since our ancient times. And these laws helps the people to be into the natural path, to go into the spiritual path. And that's the purpose of my teaching in everywhere, to teach about these wisdoms and tell the people that we need to be in this spiritual path. Because this time, people are forgetting. They are not understanding about the spirituality. They are just working in the life as a zombies, and they are very littered with the material things, with the money. Mm-hmm. And I say the money is leading us into the misunderstanding, into the hate, probably because the money, there is a war in the world, but we work hard for money. Mm-hmm. And ancient people, we worked, but we need to know that how the money is changing people all over the world. When you follow the spiritual path, the money no matter.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And the purpose of my show is to raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. And you've given so much wisdom today.
Yes, I know people, they need to learn. And I know ancient people here in America, the Native Americans, they have also wisdoms. And ancient people were connected, so we have yes to remain people. That's now the way to follow and remember the wisdoms of our ancestors.
I've been very fortunate to interview people from the Hollow Earth before, and they said to follow your heart mind, not logic so much, but your heart mind, with love to make the best decisions for yourself, your family, for friends, and also the planet too.
Of course, love is important. Mm-hmm. Love is the most important we have in the earth. So many people this time, they go seeking love. Mm-hmm. So we have to find the love, and love really will lead us into the freedom and into the happinesses. And there are steps also to find this love, because many people are just connected with the necessities. So we have to find the inner meaning of this, the love, which is really very connected with the truth.
The other message that I get from my friends in the Hollow Earth is that we need to take care of Mother Earth much better than we have been.
Yeah, that's the way also, because we live on. Many people, they are forgetting that how we are really very connected with Mother Earth, and we have a relationship, you know. And we said in our belief, the same you do in your life, you do with the Mother Earth. So what is the same you do in your life and you do with the Mother Earth? You know, we prepare the earth. We also prepare our life. We sow in the earth. You also sow in your life. Mm-hmm. We harvest the earth. We also harvest in our life. Of course, many people, they want to harvest without sowing. Mm-hmm. Of course, many people, they want to sow without preparing. Mm-hmm. That's a relationship with the Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. And with this step, you will understand who you are and for what we are here. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to understand that we have a relationship with the Mother Earth. This time, many people, they want to harvest, adding a lot of fertilizer and chemic. That's not the way. And what we harvest, and healthy food. But when you plant and you grow naturally, I know that will be a very healthy food. It's a relationship we have with the earth.
Beautiful, beautiful. Have you talked to the spirit of Mother Earth before?
Yes, every time. We pray to the Mother Earth, we talk to the spirit of the Mother Earth. Every healing, because we are here.
Beautiful. I don't want to put you on the spot, Sylvia, But for my listeners in Seattle and around the world, are there any messages that you could give my listeners around the world from Mother Earth now?
Yes. I want to just say to the people all over the world to seek inner themselves the meaning of the love. When you understand what is love, you will expand love. When you will understand what is love, you will understand that you are Mother Earth. They said, everybody, we are Mother Earth. Everybody, we are Pachamama. That means you will be Pachamama when you will permit the rivers running on the way that needs to go. You will be Pachamama when you will permit the animals being as your spiritual brothers and sisters. You will be Pachamama when you will be permitting growing the trees on the way that needs to grow. That's the meaning of love, and that's the meaning also of our Mother Earth.
Could you ask Mother Earth what she thinks about Fukushima?
You know, I know that that was one of the big damage that the people, humans, we did. Mm-hmm. And Mother Earth, in places as Fukushima and other places, was really very angry. But we have to heal. We have to ask a lot of forgivenesses mm-hmm. to the Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. Then we'll be healed, and then probably we'll expand the energy of love for all over the world.
If you don't mind, I'd love to ask this question, Sylvia. I've been told that there is perhaps 10% of the planet who want to do good things, light workers. There's another 10% who are negative, and another 80% who are neutral. And I've been told that if we can just get 1% of that 80% who are neutral into the positive camp, then the entire planet will tip into the positive side of life.
Of course. You know, that's the way to heal the Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. No way, because I know people in the world that are more disconnected. Mm-hmm. But when we teach one by one, this will be expanded, of course. Mm-hmm. It's important to say, to tell, and teach the people in the world.
I have many psychic friends in my work, Sylvia. I'm a psychic, and I talk to my other friends frequently about the planet and what we can do to make it a better place. And I was told last week by a friend of mine named Carol White, wonderful psychic, that we are close to the tipping point to turning this planet into the positive side.
Of course. I can understand now that because I said 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I cannot be able to come here. Mm-hmm. But the planet, the Mother Earth is changing. For some reason, and I am here. Because to come to America is very hard. Mm-hmm. The visa and everything. Mm-hmm. But I am here. For some reason, I've been other places, teaching, telling the wisdoms of the people, of the ancients, of the ancestors. So I know this is a very big changing in the world, and that the people, probably most of the people, are not understanding. Some people are understanding about this. Mm-hmm. And this is the change, mm-hmm. the new beginning. We have just to help, heal, and pray, and do a lot of forgivenesses to the Mother Earth, and seek the love.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. You have such beautiful words of wisdom. And I appreciate you so much for coming on today, Sylvia. Is there any other messages from Mother Earth you could give my many listeners?
You know, one of the messages I can say to the people in the world is what I learned from my homies. Every little community, they have one mayor for the land. And when I am in other places, I said, we need to have one mayor all over the world for the Mother Earth. That will help to preserve the earth, to heal the earth. So I said, in all the mind of the human beings, we need to put in the mind that this earth needs to be healed. needs to be protected and respected.
And I think that's the key, respected and protected.
Yes, the respect is very important. And we have laws for the Mother Earth. That's why when I teach about the wisdoms of the Aymaras, I teach about the laws for the Mother Earth, the laws for the humans, and the laws for the people. And it's important, you know. One of the laws that really we have for the humans is to love, to work, and to do service. And the other laws that we have for the humans is don't lie, don't steal, and don't be lazy. And the other laws for the Mother Earth is to prepare, to sow, and to harvest. And the other laws for the humans is the belief in the three worlds. The upper world, the Alak Pacha. This world, Akapacha. And underworld, Mankapacha. The three worlds need to be respected. And these are the laws still in my home place.
Beautiful. And I think if we did respect Mother Earth and our fellow human beings on this planet would be a lot happier.
Of course, that's the way to be in happinesses. That's the way to live in freedom that the many people they go seeking. Love, freedom, and happinesses, that's the way. When you do the love to the Mother Earth, when you do the respect to the Mother Earth, and when you give happinesses to the Mother Earth.
Sylvia, I want to thank you so much for coming on the radio program today. You've given my listeners so much profound wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you to you for inviting me to be in this.
My pleasure. That was Sylvia Kalesaya, Chukimia, yes. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the program today. Thank you so much, Sylvia.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me in this.
My friends, I hope you enjoyed that interview. It was really interesting talking to her. My next interview is with David Lorimer in Scotland. He was one of the world's most famous near-death researchers, and what he has to say is extremely profound and very interesting. We'll go ahead and play that.
Hello, friends. I'm interviewing a wonderful, fascinating gentleman named David Lorimer from Scotland and France today. David, welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be on the show.
You have a fascinating background, and you've done a lot of research in near-death experiences as well as life reviews.
Yes, I've been studying this probably for nearly 40 years since I first read Raymond Moody's book, and I remember the day I read it in London. I read it in one sitting, and it had an extraordinary impact on me because I realized not only that near-death experiences were important, but they could tell us something about how to live life, not just how to prepare for death.
Fascinating. Now, Raymond Moody's book, of course, was Life After Life, about the experiences of people and spirits that have passed on, and that there was really no such thing as death, was there?
That's indeed the conclusion. And one of the people who's also working in this field was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and her book On Death and Dying came out in 1969. And she also collected a large number of near-death experiences, although it was Raymond who coined the term near-death experience, now become NDE, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, you gave a wonderful lecture today at the Infant Consciousness Conference here in Italy, and one of the things you quoted was that she realized how many people she'd helped after she passed over.
Yes, this is an extraordinary book about her post-mortem existence, and so she was able to confirm a lot of what she had discovered about what happens when you die. And she was sort of overwhelmed by this feeling of love as a result of the people that she had helped in her transformation courses, and also just in her lectures, and changing people's views and enabling them to understand a bit more about death and therefore a bit more about life.
One of the things that you said earlier today was very profound. And you said that thought is first, and that we are both receivers and actors in this world in terms of thought. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Yes, this was a quote from Emerson, where he said, we live in the lap of immense intelligence, and we are receivers of its truth and organs of its activity. And so we operate, we receive inspiration, and then we can give that out into the world through our actions and through our the inspiration that we receive. So I think that if you think about it, the divine only has us, human beings, as agents in the physical world. Of course, there are other worlds, in my view, where there are agencies in those worlds as well, and they influence us, whether we know that or not. But it means that each individual has a unique contribution to make. And so it's very important for me, and part of my educational work is about this, to help young people and everyone I can, you know, discover a deeper sense of purpose.
That's fascinating. That is just fascinating. Now, unfortunately, earlier last week, there was that tragic attack in Nice by that gentleman who drove a lorry, a truck, into all these poor people, 80 people killed, and I think 100 or more wounded. But if that gentleman, for example, had realized that he would be accountable, held accountable for his actions, and plus that we are all one, he probably wouldn't have done it.
Well, that's the basic argument of my book, Hole in One, that based on the insights and structure of the near-death experience review, which is also reflected in the afterlife, because the same thing happens with reports from the other side, that we experience what it was like to be the other person or the other people in a particular situation. And so in the case you've just cited, this man, in my view, will have to experience what it's like to have been killed by his actions, and not only all those people and the people who are wounded, but also the effects on their relations. And so everybody who was killed there will have family back in their own countries. And so he may have to go through the experiences of the grieving and bereavement that he's created. And my contention is that if one really realized that we are all one in the way that I'm suggesting, then you would naturally act towards other people in the way that you want them to act towards you, which is the famous golden rule.
Well, those are very profound words of wisdom, David. And I have to ask you, too, you've talked earlier about the superconscious mind. Could you talk about a little bit about that, please?
Yes, I was talking about the difference between the subconscious and the superconscious mind, and I was saying that the superconscious mind is not discussed very much, but it was very much part of the structure of mind put forward by the new thought thinkers such as Thomas Troward, Ralph Waldo Trine, and Charles Harnell, the superconscious mind is in fact the divine mind, and as that is within us, then we do potentially have access to all this knowledge which is contained in the divine mind. But in order to have access, we need to open ourselves and be receptive. Otherwise, it's just not going to get through. And so I think one example of this, which was given in a lecture yesterday, is the extraordinary sort of mathematical genius capacity that some people have to arrive at a correct solution without any kind of conscious processing. Or another example would be some people are able to tell you what day of the week it was on January the 15th, 1842. And there's no normal way of doing this. And so these people must be tapping into what I can only describe as a superconscious mind.
One of the issues that Professor Urban Laszlo, who sponsored this conference here in Italy, has written about is that the mind exists not so much inside of our physical body, but the superconscious mind existing outside of us.
Yes, it also reminds me of this subtle quotation from the Neoplatonic philosopher Plotinus, who said, "We are within a reality which is also within us." And so we are within consciousness, and consciousness is within us. And so there's a sort of reciprocity, if you like, that we participate in this much wider consciousness than we are immediately aware of.
Fascinating. Now, you mentioned earlier when we were speaking about daffodils and how that's a beautiful analogy. Could you please share that with my many listeners?
Yes, I was talking about the Walter Russell explanation of unfolding and refolding. And so the process of birth and growth corresponds to an unfolding, and the process of decay and dying corresponds to a refolding. And so the example I gave was that of a daffodil bulb. In the spring, the shoot comes up, then the flower unfolds in all its beauty. And then as it matures, it withers and dies, and the whole stem then goes, as it were, back into the earth. And so we operate this process is going on at all sorts of different levels. So, for instance, breathing out and breathing in, getting up in the morning, living the day, and going refolding back into bed in the evening. The whole process of life is an unfolding, and death is a refolding. So things, in that sense, emerge from the source and they return to the source.
That's right. You mentioned Walter Russell in his quote that all things return to their source.
Yes, and that's exactly what I was talking about just now in terms of the unfolding and the refolding. And so if you think about the daffodil again, and the source in this case is the bulb, well, the flower unfolds every year from the bulb, and then the growth all refolds back into the earth, back into the bulb, and then the bulb actually then splits so that you can then dig it up and you've got two bulbs. So maybe there's a lesson in that too.
Fascinating. Now, I get a lot of questions from people all over the world on how we can make this a better planet. And one of the most important and profound things that I've learned from your research, David, is that that whatever we do, it comes back to us. If we do good things in life, that'll come back to us. If we do bad things in life, that'll also come back to us too. And because we are all part of that what you call the superconscious mind, we all have that divine spark within us. And if we realize that essentially that we are all one, that if you harm someone, you're basically harming yourself. And so that hopefully should make people more aware of their actions and, more importantly, lead a life of compassion.
Yes, I agree. I think the simplest way of putting this is the sowing and reaping, or the planting, I think, because we plant these ideas in our mind and then we water them. Mm-hmm. And then what we think about and what we're preoccupied with grows. And because we're watering it with our thoughts and our reflections. Mm-hmm. So any gardener will tell you that if you want carrots, you have to sow carrots. If you want lettuce, you have to sow lettuce. Mm-hmm. So if you want love to return to you, then you have to sow love. And this seems to me to be possibly the most fundamental law and insight that we have to learn in our journey on Earth is to understand what it means to act lovingly and kindly, and to realize that all the love that we give out will come back to us. And I remember one occasion which might amuse your listeners, and I have Labrador dogs, and I remember we had a litter of six puppies, and they were all as you know. They were sleeping in a heap together, and they're all sort of intertwined with each other. And so I knelt down, and I said to the puppies, I'm going to tell you the secret of life. And the secret is, the more love you give, the more love you will receive.
Wow, that's incredible. What a beautiful quote. What a beautiful quote. Something else you said earlier today that I found was very profound. You said, thought is first. And before you have any actions in this dimension, that you have thoughts first. So it's important to have good thoughts. Would that be a good corollary?
Yes, but it also applies to feelings. So we are, what goes on inside us is a combination or a feedback, if you like, of thoughts and feelings. Thoughts from the mind and feelings from the heart. Mm-hmm. And so if we develop good thoughts and good feelings, then those will be expressed in good action. So the action is the fruit, if you like, mm-hmm. Whereas the feeling and the thought is the seed. And I think it's also important to remember that everything we see in the outside world was once a thought. And my grandfather was a famous architect, and one of his great works is called The Thistle Chapel in Edinburgh at St. Giles Cathedral. And it's an incredibly beautiful small structure with all sorts of components of statues and seats and stained glass and roof bosses. And the whole thing began in his mind, and then he then drew it out. And then as it was drawn out, so it was produced. And I'll tell you the one most original thing there, which if any of your listeners go to Edinburgh, see if you can find it, mm-hmm. is the angel playing the bagpipes.
Fascinating. Well, I'll sure. I have listeners in Scotland, too, and I'll have them look for that. I'll have them look for that. One of the people that you mentioned before was, I hope I pronounced this correctly, Bensadono. Could you please explain a little bit about that person?
Yes, Bensadono is his spiritual name, and he's also known as Peter Dunov. He was a Bulgarian sage who lived from 1864 to 1944, and who, in my view, was one of the greatest spiritual teachers of the last 500 years. He's very little known, and he was a musician as well as being a sage. And so not only is his work expressed in many words and principles, but also he wrote music, he played the violin, and he composed the beautiful Panurithmi Sacred Dance, where he created both the music and the movements. And this Panurithmi also helps us live in harmony with nature, in harmony with ourselves, and in harmony with invisible forces.
Mm-hmm. Was he the person? I recently read an article about him on the internet, where he had made a very profound prophecy in 1944 that we would be entering into an age of light and enlightenment and compassion.
Yes, he actually explains that the a new era began in 1914, so it's gradually unfolding towards a new kind of person, which he called the sixth race. And what he was the prophet of, if you like, and these are his own words, was a culture of love. I always talk myself about a culture of love and wisdom. And he had these five key principles: love, wisdom, truth, justice, and virtue or goodness. And the panurithmi helps express some of these movements so that when you're moving your hands together, one of those hands represents love and the other represents wisdom, and then you move forward in truth. So it's incredibly beautiful, and your listeners can Google Panurithmi and find that there are demonstrations of it on the internet.
Fascinating. Well, that's something that I'm not familiar with, but I'll certainly do some research and then share it with my many listeners around the world. The other thing, too, you mentioned was Charles Hanel, the Master Key System.
Yes, it's Charles Hanel, H-A-A-N-E-L, the Master Key System, which was a correspondence course that he started in 1916. And one of his students, interestingly, was Napoleon Hill, who is better known for his writings, which were initiated by Andrew Carnegie.
Oh, fascinating. That is just fascinating. The Master Key System, did it teach people certain values of compassion?
Well, the Master Key System is a correspondence course in a number of different parts. And what it teaches the reader is to understand the structure of mind and how the mind creates from the inside out. And then it has various exercises for people to develop the ideas within them. And it's a book more about wisdom, I would say, than compassion as such. But it gives you the necessary principles to use to unfold what it is you'd like to see in your life.
Well, that's fascinating. You know, I wanted to ask you this question. Many people around the world ask me how they can make this planet a better place. And what would you say to a young person or a person that comes up to you now to say, how can you make this world a better place?
Well, I think the first thing for young people to realize is along the lines of what I've been saying already, that their reality proceeds from the inside out. And my educational program, which is called Inspire Aspire, is designed to give young people a sense of agency and that they can make a difference. And so I think the first thing is that you need to get to know yourself, and get to know your strengths, get to know the qualities you need to work on. And then you have to have inspiration. Who inspires you? I've been inspired by very many people. And then you have to define your aspirations. What is it that you'd like to see? And so we ask young people in our Global Citizens in the Making program, we ask them, what is your vision for a better world? And then we also ask them, what will you commit to in order to help realize that vision? So I think one of the first things is really to work on refining your own qualities and relationships. And because all our efforts in life, they start on a small scale in our immediate environment, our immediate family, the people we work with. And so one should really work outwards from that. So start with where you are, and then see how you can do your best within those circumstances, and then gradually you can move on to something larger.
Mm-hmm. And what you said before, earlier too, David, was very profound in that whatever you do, good or bad, it can come back to you. So you want to make a life of good choices, trying to make this planet a better place, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's really what's rewarding. As you proceed along the path, you realize it's important to serve. And that the meaning of your life really is in the service you can give to others. And insofar as you give to others, then the universe will give back to you.
Fascinating. Now, you mentioned you have a program. Could you tell us, my listeners, a little bit about that and the website, perhaps?
Yes, my program is called Inspire-Aspire, and the website is inspire-aspire.org.uk. And this is a program that's been going for just over 10 years and has reached over 250,000 young people in 30 countries around the world, mainly in the UK and principally in Scotland, because that's where I started up the program. And it has a number of different components along the lines I've been referring to. There's a self-knowledge and self-awareness component. Then there's an inspiration component and an aspiration component. And it's a very, very simple process, and anyone can do it online. You can go onto the website and download the template, which is just 3 pages, and then there are detailed instructions on how to do it. And if any of your listeners do it, then you can send the result back to the Inspire Aspire website, and we'll send you a certificate.
Well, that is really wonderful. You know, here in the United States, our educational system, I think, used to be one of the a system to be admired, and usually taught people a lot of core values. But that's been eviscerated over the years, and now people have a lot of complaints about the educational system in the United States that it doesn't teach anybody anything, really, and certainly no core values. So your educational program is wonderful. Can I give out the website for people?
Yes, sure. Yes.
Okay, it's www.character-scotland.org.uk.
Yes, I think the other one I mentioned before is the actual program website, which is www.inspire-aspire.org.uk. That's for the program. The Character Scotland website gives a bit more detail about the more general work that we're doing. And then character education really started in the US, but the UK is now developing its own form of it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. Finally, I wanted to ask you about your book, A Hole in One, and where my listeners could get a copy of that.
Well, as with a lot of my books, it's been out of print for quite some time. But I am going to, in the autumn, I am going to get it uploaded onto Kindle, and it'll be called The Resonant Mind, rather than. And the other thing that your listeners could do is you could go to my personal website, which is david.lorimer.co.uk, and follow my various activities there.
Wonderful, wonderful. David, is there anything else you'd like to tell my listeners around the world?
Well, I think if we realize that we are all co-creating a new world. We're all co-creating. So we've co-created the world that we see around us now. A lot of the negative aspect of that is reported in the news media. But then millions of people are doing wonderful things that don't get reported. And so I think if you remember that we can co-create or move towards a culture of love and wisdom, if we ourselves, on a day-to-day basis, try to act lovingly and wisely.
That's very beautiful and profound words, David, and I want to thank you so much for coming on my show today.
Well, thank you very much, and it's been a real pleasure to meet you here in Bagno di Luca in Tuscany in Italy.
And I'd like to welcome you back anytime at all back to my program. David, thank you so much for coming on my show today.
Thank you.
Hello, friends. That was David Lorimer from Scotland. I want to thank you all so much for listening today. 1 week from today, I'll be broadcasting from another spiritual conference in the Dominican Republic in the Caribbean. I hope you all have a wonderful and really bright afternoon and weekend. Bye-bye, and thank you again for listening.